We will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. I know we were supposed to start promptly at 7 o'clock, so we're slightly delayed. Thank you. These are bills that frequently take a lot of time. There are a lot of steps involved, and we just wanted to make sure we had I's dotted and T's crossed and everybody comfortable, so thank you for your patience for all of that. Representative Creasall, are you just about ready?
Ready, Mr. Chair, yep.
Okay, well, kind of thought you would be. While we're waiting, we will approve. Representative Dowd, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from the March 22nd meeting?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Dowd moves
move
the
those.
Meeting. Representative Dowd moves the minutes from the March 22nd meeting. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. With that, Representative Creasall, welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1485 so it is properly before us. And whenever you have your, you can start telling us what we need to know. And whenever you have the computer up and running, we'll get started with that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would also ask, I have a delete all amendment.
Thank you. I will move the DE3 amendment. You want to go ahead and discuss the DE3 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you for having us here tonight. What House File 1485 with the delete all amendment, this is a bill that will create tax relief for charities across the state of Minnesota, as well as add sports themed tip boards to the bill, which will create enough tax relief, enough money to then fund a Minnesota Vikings stadium. I have testifiers here that can get into the ins and outs. I'll just kind of touch over the brief overview of what it includes. There would be $72 million generated from the electronic pull tabs, $16 million generated from the sports-themed tip board for a total of $88 million, and these are estimates, of course. $36 million would be used as tax relief for the charities, which is a 29% tax reduction, with $52 million each year set aside for the Minnesota Vikings Stadium, the People's Stadium. The backup revenues would not be triggered unless the state could not meet its annual obligation. And if the electronic pull tabs and tip boards generate between $88 million and $104 million, the charities will receive additional tax relief in the form of a rebate. If the proposal generates more than $104 million, the additional funds will then be reverted back to the stadium to pay off the bonds earlier. Mr. Chair and members, I have testifiers here that can go a little bit further into the proposal.
Thank you, Representative Creasall. Any questions, members, for Representative Creasall? Otherwise, we'll get to the testifiers. Mr. O'Gara or Ms. Pasek, do you want to go?
Sure. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Sarah Pasek with the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association. We're going to show just a short video about charitable gambling. It's from a grassroots effort called Profit Minnesota, which was sponsored by the Minnesota Licensed Beverage Association.
Thank you, and we like the word short. We want to make sure everybody gets a chance to be heard.
My name is Kevin Stunick. I'm the fire chief here in Brainerd, Minnesota. I've been involved with the fire department over 36 years. It's kind of a family tradition. My father was a fireman for 20-some years, and I've had a brother who was on the department for 22 years, so it's kind of in my blood. The biggest difficulties, I think, are just managing the budget, trying to make ends meet. You know, we're always being asked to cut, cut, cut. In emergency services, you can only cut so much where it starts to affect response time, it starts to affect public safety, and it starts to affect, you know, the citizens of the community. We've got a lot of charitable organizations in the community, service clubs, JCs, those kind of things, and we work with them very closely in helping them sponsor events and work for them when they do have events. In return, a lot of times they will donate money to us that we in turn try to use for rescue tools. They help us greatly in keeping our operation going.
My name is Kurt Dory, and I work for Brainerd Fire Department in Brainerd, Minnesota. We were in need of some automatic external defibrillators, or defibs, and we didn't have the budget money for it. And with working with the charitable gaming, we were able to obtain three of them, plus a training unit. So not only could we train our own people, but we could also use it to train the public, too. It was a head-on collision. It was nighttime. She had hit a pole. Had I not been there, or the crew that I was with had not been there, and not had the machine that we had or had the crew that we had. It not been there, this person may or may not be alive. And it's nice to see a patient that you had 2 years ago walk up to you at the mall, you know, if you're in plain clothes, and they walk up to you and they say, "Do you remember me?" It's just kind of a nice feeling to know that you did something, or the crew that you were with did something, and this person is still alive because of it.
My name is Charlie Dunham, and I'm a firefighter, fire equipment operator for the city of Brainerd. We, many, many years, went without defibrillators and some rescue equipment we needed, and a lot of the stuff is as a direct result of pull tabs and everything else, so that they can give something back to the community. And what better tool is out to give back to the community than to be able to save a life? Personally, it kind of hit home. Almost 2 years ago, I was on duty, and I heard a phone call or a radio transmit calling the ambulance out to an address that sounded real familiar. When I looked up the address, I realized why it was so familiar. It was my sister's house. My sister had gone into ventricular fibrillation on her birthday. She was on the ground. It was a total of, I want to say, 55 minutes that she was down. And it was 55 minutes that she was down. She was shocked 5 times. To see somebody come back and start breathing on their own again and starting to see color come back in their face, there's no describing it. I mean, it's what we are here for, what we live for, and what we train every day, and that's what we train for. You know, that's our job.
I'm Bob Lehmeyer. I'm presently the chairman of the club committee at the VFW post in town here, and I served in the U.S. Navy aboard the USS Stewart and the USS Bainbridge. VFW to the community, I believe, for veterans of foreign wars. We donate a lot out to the community. You know, we like to help out all the local high schools. We have different programs that we donate to. We donate to the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the police department, the fire department.
My name is Lloyd Rearing. I'm post adjutant for VFW 428 St. Cloud, Minnesota. I was in the Army, Vietnam 1969, 25th Division. The more money we can get, the more is able to be released for the community service. We pride ourselves with the baseball and hockey program, but we've had to cut that back probably the last 3-4 years. We've cut it back almost 50% donation-wise for those teams and stuff that we were sponsoring. Back about 2006, we were over $1 million gross. Just this past year, we're down under 500,000 gross. So it's been a heavy drop over the last 4 or 5 years.
Working with charitable gaming and stuff right now is becoming a lot harder because we're not getting the funds like we used to. Gaming is way down. It's just because it's slow now. You know, the economy stuff. There's other VFWs, in fact, in our district that actually had to close their doors. About 2 years ago now, we decided at our executive board meeting we aren't going to take on any new charities because we just don't have the funds to support them. And the charities that we have now, we had to cut back on what we're giving them to help them out. The proposals that they're doing now with to help out with the electronic gaming in the club rooms and bars, I guess, I'm all for it if it's going to help, because then we can start giving back to the community again like we used to.
Thank you, Ms. Pisick. Mr. O'Gara, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dan O'Gara. My wife and I are the owner-operators of O'Gara's Bar and Grill in St. Paul. My grandfather opened in 1941, and it's been in my family ever since. Real briefly, because I know everybody's on a time crunch, I'm past president of MLBA and currently on the MLBA board, and this is going to help a lot of the charities in Minnesota, and it's going to help a lot of small businesses like mine all over the state. And I think that in its current form with the sports boards and the electronic pull tabs, this is going to help people stay in our businesses and help us sell another couple of burgers a day and a couple of more beers. And I think that, you know, from our perspective, it's less about the gambling and more about the social aspect of this and just keeping patronage coming in our businesses. So I just wanted to say today that MLBA and bars like mine across the state are in full support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Gara. Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. O'Gara. Mr. McElroy, if you could identify yourself for the tape, please proceed when you're ready. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Dan McElroy. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Restaurant Association, the Minnesota Lodging Association, and the Resort and Campground Associations. We have more than 2,500 members in all 87 counties of the state. And all three of our associations have taken a position in support of increased opportunities for charitable gaming in establishments with liquor licenses. As Dan O'Gara said, it is not so much about the gaming as having more people have more opportunities to have more fun. I hear particularly from our border area establishments that the gaming fun opportunities in the states we compete with, particularly Wisconsin, Iowa, and South Dakota, often have customers saying it's just a little more fun. And so we're encouraged by the opportunities in this bill, and my members are very much in support, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. Members, any questions? Mr. Wilson, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and start when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is King Wilson. I'm the executive director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. I'd like to thank you for hearing this bill. Mr. Chair, last year we had this bill in front of you to do the electronic gaming, and the idea was so that we would have be able to do some significant tax reform and relief so that we would have additional dollars to support the local programs and projects that we support, as was in the videotape, and I think that folded better than anything I can say.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Members, any quick? Oh, did you have more?
Mr. Chair, I can quit with that.
Thank you, Mr. Wilson. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else who would like to come down and speak in favor of Representative Creasel's bill? Is there anyone in the audience? Well, I'll start with the list. I know there are some that would like to be speak against it. Mr. Rockler, if you want to come down, we'll let you start the opposition here. And is Mr. Pritchard here? Mr. Rockler, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you.
Whenever you're ready, we're ready for you.
Take me just a second.
No hurry.
Chairman Hoppe, members of the committee, my name is Ken Rockler, and I'm here for the Tavern League and also representing the Bowling Proprietors of Minnesota. Additionally, there are a number of establishments from some of the other organizations that have been up here before that are not necessarily opposed to this bill, but they want something better. I'm here to oppose this bill for a number of reasons. Number one, it doesn't raise enough money for the state as other options. Number two, it doesn't raise enough money for charity. Number three, it doesn't help the 3,000 individual hospitality establishments enough at this point. Number four, this gets a little dicey, but it further endangers those charities and establishments by lending credence to the false premise that there is enough help on this bill to offset whether or not a racino goes in or not. There's some rumors as to whether a deal has been cut on that. Number five, there's a question on the legality of the tip boards that has already been raised by both, I believe, the governor and some legislators today. I saw that in the paper. Number six, news sources say that the Vikings may not be enthralled with a couple of the provisions here. The backup sources that they're going to be there. I'm feeling a little lonely here right now because I don't think that I'm going to have any luck on this, but what I'm hoping is that somebody would like to amend this bill to add language from 1435 because of the following. The fiscal note on the bill brings $400 million per biennium. It actually brings a lot more. You don't need any of this Band-Aid solutions to try and put things together with a backup just in case it doesn't work. It raises a lot more money from charities. When I looked at the film up there, I thought, if you want to talk about legions, fire departments, Apple Valley hockey, the bill, this 1435, raises double the amount for charities. In fact, last year, I want to be careful I don't break procedure here, but members of one of the organizations that testified in favor of this just now told us and one of your colleagues that the reason they opposed our bill is our bill raised too much money for charity, if you can believe that. Third, it's legal. I've shown this to a number of you. It's already been in federal district court twice because it's not a slot machine. It's a video lottery terminal that dispenses 34,000 paper tabs, and the game isn't rigged like the current paper pull tab game is against the state, the common average player, and the charity. And finally, last but not least, it will help communities and bars, charities throughout the entire state of Minnesota. So I don't know if anybody would like to step up to the plate and try and amend language in there. My guess is no, but I'm here. Anybody has any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Rockler. Members, any questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Rockler. And I don't see Mr. Pritchard here. Is Don Weinberger here?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Come on up, please. And while Mr. Weinberger is getting set, anybody that wants to speak in favor or in opposition to the CRESL bill is more than welcome to. We are open to public testimony. And we are going to make sure we want to keep this to this bill that's before us and gaming, charities, gambling, things like that. So with that, Mr. Weinberger, please identify yourself on the tape and start when you're ready.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Don Weinberger. I am here to voice my concerns in opposition to House File 2810, which would allow electronic pull tabs and bingo in 2,500 bars, restaurants, and other organizations. I want to voice my concerns because of my personal experiences with gambling addiction and to consider the social costs that towns, cities, and counties may incur from blanking the state with electronic video gambling. Around 1980, I started playing parlay cards for football games at local bars. About a year or two later, I began betting individual games through a friend with a bookmaker. Shortly thereafter, I began to deal directly with a bookmaker. Soon, I became hooked and was betting on sports virtually every day. It wasn't long after that that the casinos started being built in the state of Minnesota. I began making frequent trips to the blackjack tables at various casinos. I borrowed money from family and friends, took out loans at the credit union banks, never paid anything off, just borrowed more money for longer periods of time. Took every credit card app that came in the mail, signed up for all of those. Had three checking accounts, was going to a bank or credit union virtually every day, kiting checks to keep myself afloat. Gambling became the focal point of each day. I had trouble sleeping at night because of the debt and would wake up each morning scheming to get through the day. I started to call in sick to work, lied to family and friends so I could spend more time at the casinos. There were even some times I did not come home at night at all. Lying became a normal way of life for me. I was not the type of husband, father, coworker, or friend that I should have been. Not as a direct result, but certainly indirectly, I lost my full-time job. We ended up in bankruptcy and lost virtually everything, including a car, a motor home, and our home of 18 years to foreclosure. Our marriage nearly ended in divorce. Through it all, I consider myself a lucky man. I never ended up in jail or committed suicide. I was able to learn to control my addiction with meetings alone. I know countless others who are not as fortunate. The number of people seeking help from compulsive gambling is unquestionably on the rise. I am very grateful that this is my only addiction. I would like to note that of all the people I have met in Gamblers Anonymous who are dually or triply addicted to either alcohol and or drugs, they all say that quitting the gambling is the hardest. Please remember these people when you think of expanding gambling through establishing electronic gambling. I urge you to reconsider expanding gambling to raise taxes for economic development or other purposes. Please look for a revenue source which won't harm thousands of Minnesotans. I believe the social costs to individuals, families, and taxpayers and local governments will far outweigh any benefits. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. Members, any questions? Thank you. Sir, if you want to testify against it, come on down. Next. Go ahead, if you could identify yourself for the record and start when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
By the way, welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me here tonight. My name is David Sweet, and I'm an Emmy Award-winning comedy writer, and I also am the inventor of the iDome, as featured on CBS News. Pat Kessler came out and featured it. Adjust this microphone a little bit. Tonight, you know, we bring up the question of gambling and really what is going to happen here. I personally lived in Vegas for 6 months. I've seen a lot of destruction from it. But I'm going to first start out with, you know, the West Coast. And I want to direct your attention to the stadium they just funded didn't require any gambling. In fact, it was just funded. And I write comedy, so all I can say is how can a bunch of potheads actually get a stadium funded with no gambling? And we up here in Minnesota are supposed to be the smart people. We have to, you know, be that desperate that we'd use gambling. You know, and these guys did this a couple weeks ago, the 49ers. And I sat down with Senator Chamberlain, and he's the top CPA with the Merit Prize. He looked over the numbers, and it's really clear. We got a plan that's very solid to get 26 companies to put $50 million on the table.
Mr. Sweet, if you could limit and focus your testimony towards what is in Representative Creasel's bill, we would appreciate it.
Okay, so this is why I'm opposing gambling. There's other funding options, okay, like California did. So I'll summarize.
Okay.
For the interest of our time. And at the end of the day, you know, this was presented to both Senator Rosen and Senator Chamberlain. They both agreed this is a doable option. The next thing I direct your attention to, really the oath, when we come to work here at the Capitol, we have an oath which is very specific. It says that we're supposed to faithfully discharge the duties of the office to the which you have just been elected to the best of your judgment. And according, of course, to the Minnesota Constitution, which, you know, the first article in the preamble says, a desiring to perpetuate its blessings and secure the same to ourselves and our posterity. Now, if I took one of you in a room and you had $1 billion and I knew I was going to walk away with $380 million for sure, you know, I don't know that that would be true. So I question if this action is really reflects what our is our Constitution and our oath that we take when we enter into office in the public's best interest. And then I did have an experience. You know, I had an ex-wife that was gambling in Las Vegas. She gambled for 12 hours straight. I thought when I'd get her out of there, she would be fine. But she actually gambled 9 at night till 9 in the morning, and she had to follow me. She had no sleep. I gave her a couple of no-dos, and now she had to follow me through mountain roads. And imagine seeing someone in your rearview mirror almost veering off the mountain road to a certain death. You know, and I was like, I couldn't get her off that machine. I talked to the casino. I said, listen, she has to get off that machine. She couldn't stop. So naturally, you know, my solution is we should have a little video on the slot machine that pops up and says, here's your next home. It's a homeless shelter, you know. And in a comedic fashion, I think that, you know, we should address, you know, drinking and gambling if it's going to cause, you know, life-threatening situations, just like any other activity we do. So I did make a little news petition about it. CBS News did a feature on some of the issues we had with gambling with the banks. So take a look at that if you want to learn more. And then overall, as far as, you know, the idea of using gambling, I did outline 12 reasons why I didn't think it was a good idea. I'm not going to go through all of them in the interest of time. But, you know, I will say that if we can fund the stadium without gambling, there's 12 reasons right here. Take a look or ask me if you would like to learn more. So I guess in summary, I think that, you know, we can do better than using gambling. You know, we just were shown how it was done in California. We just had a meeting with Senator Chamberlain. He's a top CPA with the Merit Prize. He looked over my numbers. He said, Dave, this looks great. Let's do this. I'm one of the guys that's done the top 6 projects for the state of Minnesota. I taught the U of M students how they could register without punch cards. So I've done a lot of technology for the state. All the projects have been very successful. So I like to bring new technologies to the table. And, of course, if we can do it without gambling, then we all win. And thanks for listening to me tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet. Members, any questions? Mr. Carney, come on up. Thank you, sir. Welcome, Chairman, to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the tape, please.
Bob Carney, Minneapolis. I passed out a handout here, an open letter to the legislature. And I would like to see an alternative to gambling revenue if possible. For that reason, I encourage you to take a look at this. We can link transit. I've developed a new transit system plan here for downtown Minneapolis to tie the convention center and the stadium together so that the stadium is an asset that can be used for convention. In addition, in the bigger picture, we have a huge energy boom going on in a third of this continent, from the Rockies to the Mississippi up to central Canada. We need to figure out a way to get the people in that area to fly in here for conventions. And one way to do that is to extend the Hiawatha line out to Flying Cloud and link the central line to the St. Paul Airport and start having commercial air flights so that everybody in the Williston Basin and through this entire region is being able to fly to Minneapolis on a daily basis and to use air taxi services. This is the way to get economic growth without gambling. Now, I am in favor of seeing this stadium, because the reality is this is a timeshare stadium. This is Vikings timeshare stadium. If you had a timeshare facility and you had an anchor tenant that used it 12 days out of the year and paid a third of the cost, you would be thrilled. And that's the reality that we have here. This is the next extension of the Minnesota Rec Room that the Metrodome has come to be. So I've passed this out, and I'm very interested in working with members of the legislature to write into the law an alternative so that we can do this with economic growth, convention business, and deeper links with all the states in what I call the Great Northern Energy Field. That is a preferable solution to gambling, and I'd like to write that in as a backup option to the gambling. So that would be my suggestion, and I'm very interested in working with everybody in the legislature on this. And I very much commend Mayor Rybeck for his initiative in getting this thing going. It has to be in downtown Minneapolis, because that's where you can use this facility the other 353 days of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Members, any questions? Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else? That's a good handout, I guess. Is there anyone else who would like to come down and speak against the bill, or for or against the bill? Seeing no one coming down, we will, members, any final questions on the DE3 amendment? I will renew my motion that the DE3 amendment to House File 1485 pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. The DE3 amendment is adopted. Okay. Representative Kreisel to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the discussion. I think everybody here pretty much touched on everything. I forgot to mention that in regards to problem gaming, there is 0.5% of the revenue that would be deposited in the general fund that to be transferred to the Commissioner of Human Services for compulsive gambling treatment. So we've tried to cover all bases here. Besides that, I'm excited to be a part of this and give more money to the charities.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kreisel or King Wilson, if he's around. I just had a question. You know, I saw the governor's thing today on tip boards having problems with federal law, and presuming that possibly illegal. It could be illegal, or if it's not, it's vague enough where a lawsuit would be presented, questioning it. Where are you at with that, and what are the implications for this bill regarding tip board and its legality?
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, committee members, King Wilson, Executive Director, Allied Charities Minnesota. We believe that the way the bill has been drafted in relation to the sports-themed tip boards is that we are just basing the outcome on a numerical outcome. It is not sports bookmaking. It does not matter who wins and loses. Currently, we have tip boards legal in the state of Minnesota today. And a sports-themed tip board is this. The current one, you sell them all, and there's a seal. You pull it. Whoever had 105 is a winner. On a sports-themed tip board, we sell the very similar things, and there are other ways to do it. But say you get 1 in 6. That's what's on the ticket right here. And this particular one is set up. It doesn't matter, regardless which team wins and loses. So if Team A wins 21-16, it's a winner. If Team B wins 21-26, the same ticket is a winner. So we think because it's just based on the numerical outcome, again, no winners, losers, doesn't matter, no odds, no bookmaking, we believe it's okay.
Representative Johnson.
I think, Mr. Chair. So then, King Wilson, do you think the governor's assessment is not entirely accurate then of tip boards and their legality? Or are you talking about a different gambling form?
Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think the governor's comments are, if we were talking about sports bookmaking or odds and things like that, I think it would then fit. we think that what we've crafted here does not fit that same area.
Members, any other questions?
For Mr. Wilson or for others?
For anybody? We're on the bill as amended. Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd actually, if it'd be all right, I'd like to ask Mr. McCormick if he's down there.
He's here.
I appreciate the advocate's perspective on that very issue. I'd much rather hear it from our nonpartisan staff in terms of how do we, if we move forward with this bill, how do tip boards not run afoul of federal law?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, members, the federal ban on sports bookmaking and sports betting is currently being challenged by more than one state. What the ban did is state that betting on gambling, either directly or indirectly, is illegal under federal law, and grandfathered in existing states, Nevada, Atlantic City, Delaware, and allowed them to continue gambling. So at this point, the provision on tip boards is drafted to A, divorce the play of the game from the state of play of the actual underlying sporting event and turn it into a purely numerical game. Whether or not this would survive a court challenge is something the courts will have to tell you. I'm not going to opine one way or the other. I will say that the author has made every attempt to craft this to be something that could survive a legal challenge.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and to Representative Creasel. I don't believe in hiding the ball. I don't think it's by accident that your bill is up on the same night that the so-called stadium bill is up. Is it your understanding that your bill will become a Plan B in the event that that Representative Lanning's bill is not able to move forward?
Representative Creasel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins, yes, this is... In order to build the stadium, we will need a funding source, so we're trying to make sure that if there is issues with the stadium bill, whatever those are, we still could pass tax relief for the charities and also a funding source for the stadium.
And Representative Atkins.
And Mr. Chair, to the extent that I understand where the Creasel bill may go, there's not a piece of it now, but there very well could be, that would set aside money that is gathered or collected as a result of this bill that would then be placed towards a fund for either pre-design or design of the stadium. Not necessarily to construct the stadium, but at least to keep the process moving forward so that the revenues that came in from this would then be placed towards a fund that could be used to do design and pre-design. The stadium planning and efforts would continue to move forward, but there'd be an opportunity to see if the revenues are in actuality realized. Specifically, I know that there have been reservations or concerns about whether or not the e-poll tab money generates the sort of estimates that people have said, and we'd be able to see just how much the e-poll tabs generates, and sports tip boards for that matter, before obligating the state to a 20 or 30 year bonding effort on behalf of the stadium. And I raise that because the idea of, you know, having the bill here, having had people hear discussions about such things and then not to say anything about it, I don't think folks appreciate that very much. I'd rather just say it out loud what I think this bill is. And Representative Creasel, I see you nodding, but perhaps you can give us your thoughts on whether what I've just described is in fact a possibility or if I'm just completely off my rocker and making stuff up out of the blue. So.
Representative Creasel, you don't need to speculate as to whether Representative Atkins might or might not be off his rocker. You can just comment on that. Representative Creasel.
Mr. Chair, Representative Atkins. That's a great idea. It's something that I'd be open for considering. Right now, this is sort of the best situation that we've all come up with. I mean, this is something that a lot people that are a lot wiser than I am have said that this is the way to do it. And I'm listening to them. If there's another way, like you said, that would set money aside for a stadium, I'd be open to hear that. But I've been very clear that this is a stadium funding bill as well as a charity bill. I do like that idea, though, Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Creasel.
Thank you, Representative Atkins, and thank you, Representative Creasel. Members, any other questions? With that, seeing no other questions, I will renew my motion that House File 1485, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Rules. With that, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Creasel, and members.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Representative Lanning, House File 2810.
The opening shift is 18 minutes.
I've got
okay. Representative Lanning, I will welcome to the committee. First of all, thank you for your patience. I will go ahead and move House File 2810 so it is properly before the committee. And with that, Representative Lanning, do you want to do a brief introduction to your bill, or do you want to move right into the DE, I believe, 7 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, members, I think it would be well to get the DE-7 on the bill.
Then I will move the DE, that I think is wise. I will move the DE-7 amendment as well, so that is in front of us. Representative Lanning, if you want to go ahead and tell us about the DE-7 amendment and what it does, and we will begin.
Mr. Chairman, we also have a technical amendment, the A-8. I would ask that you...
Was that the technical amendment? Was the A-8 amendment?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Do members have that in their packet, the A-8 amendment? Mm-hmm. Representative Lanning, that is a short technical amendment. I will, pending Mr. McCormick telling me I can't, I think I can incorporate that. Or Mr. McCormick? Okay, I think we can just incorporate that. But Representative Lanning, do you want to explain what the technical amendment does?
Mr. Chairman, I would ask Mr. McCormick to do that.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. McCormick will tell you that there are two parts to the technical amendment. First, there are changes on page 29 of the DE-7 amendment to clarify the flow of funds and which accounts they're going to, and these changes are purely technical. And those are 1.3, 1.4, 1.5, and 1.6 of the A-8 amendment. The second set of changes are on lines 1.7 and 1.8, and they just are deleting an extraneous reference that doesn't need to be there.
Members, any questions to the technical amendment to the DE-7 amendment? I will go ahead and, seeing no questions, I will go ahead and incorporate those technical changes into the DE-7 amendment. Representative Lanning, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I want to first of all thank yes. Chair Hoppe and members of the committee for hearing the bill tonight. This has been a long process, and I'd like to give a little bit of brief background of this whole process of developing this bill, especially for newer members who may not know some of this history. I first started talking with representatives of Vikings shortly after they came to town, after they had purchased the team, and they expressed interest from the very beginning in wanting to work towards a new facility here in Minnesota. In 2006, I was very much involved in the Twin Stadium project, and the Vikings came to us. They had hoped that we would be able to consider a stadium at that time in addition to the Twin Stadium. We told them no, that was we had enough on our plate, and we asked them to wait, and they did. In 2010, there was a bill that I co-authored, authored by Representative Solberg, that started the process again of trying to bring a new facility to Minnesota. And then in the last year, we picked up the effort again, And we indicated to the team that what they needed to do is to pick a preferred site for the facility and bring to us a local partner who would help make this happen. We have felt all along that there needs to be a local government partner in this whole process to make it work. That's what happened with the Twin Stadium as well, and it was necessary in this case. Earlier this year, the team did come to us and told us that they preferred the Arden Hills site, the Ramsey County site, and that Ramsey County stood prepared to join them in partnership in trying to make this happen. Well, as you all know, we started running into problems with regard to that proposal and had to back away. And then at that point, the team decided that they wanted to try and see if they could work out an arrangement with the city of Minneapolis to a location there. And we looked at a number of different sites in Minneapolis, but finally settled on the Metrodome site. As a result of that, we had negotiators that went to work to see if they could put together a proposal. Representatives of the team, representatives from the state, from the governor's office, from the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, sat down with representatives from the city of Minneapolis to see if they could put together a proposal. They finally were able to do that and brought that to us. At that point, we said in order for this bill to move forward, several things had to happen. First, we needed a show of support from a majority of the Minneapolis City Council, that we needed at least a letter signed by a majority of council members saying they supported this deal that had been negotiated. As you know, that agreement, that support was given to us last Monday. The second thing we indicated that needed to be done is to come to an agreement with the charities as to how we would go about sharing the revenue that would come from the electronic poll tabs and bingo to meet the needs of the charities as well as our needs in trying to fund the stadium. And thirdly, we indicated that we needed to finalize and clarify the kinds of backup funding sources there might be in case the charity, the revenue from electronic poll tabs was not sufficient to cover the state's obligations. And in this bill, we have clarified that and have indicated a number of sources of backup funding. Now let me speak more specifically to what the DE7 amendment reflects and the changes to the bill 2810, that was the bill that was introduced here a few weeks ago. First of all, there's no change relative to the role of the city of Minneapolis and what the city of Minneapolis has asked and agreed to do. There's no change there. We have incorporated into this DE7 amendment the agreement that was reached with the charities whereby half of the $72 million a year in additional revenue that would come as a result of the electronic poll tabs and bingo, that half of that would go back to the charities in the form of tax relief. We've made it clear all the way along that we understood the problem that the charities had with the level of taxation that they were experiencing. It was causing some of the charities to go out of business as a result of that tax burden. And so what you have before you reflects that kind of an agreement where half of that $72 million would be provided in tax relief. The amendment, the delete everything amendment, also notes a significant change with respect to the state and the team's role here. The original bill had the state covering the city of Minneapolis's annual operating subsidy and annual capital reserve requirement. And this bill, the DE7, now has the team front-ending that. So, in effect, the state's exposure here is reduced for the first 5 years by $7.5 million. The team will eventually get paid back once the revenue The bonds are paid off for the convention center, and that revenue is coming to the state. But the team would pick this up on the front end along the way. The overall funding remains the same. The DE7 doesn't change. The team is still providing $427 million as a private investment in this facility. And over the life of this agreement, the team will end up paying over half of the total cost of this facility, something that we have felt all along was important to achieve. The state's portion remains at $398 million as it was originally, and Minneapolis still needs to come up with $150 million. They're allowed some time to do that. Because the bonds on the convention center will not be paid up until 5 years from 2021. I want to point out that this DE amendment still has no statewide income or sales taxes. We have said from day one that we're not going to raise any statewide income or sales taxes to help pay for this facility. We have indicated that if we're going to raise a tax, we need to have it going to other priorities. And so that remains the case and the principle with respect to this draft bill that you have before you. Then finally, with respect to backup funding, let me point out that this language indicates that the state will get a total of $52 million. And we're estimating that debt service on the bonds that will be sold will run at $42 million. And remember that $7.5 million of that for the next 5 years will be picked up by the team, front-ended by the team. But nonetheless, debt service at $42 million. Now, that means that the difference between $42 million and $52 provides additional revenue of $10 million. If it comes in, which we expect and believe that it will, that $10 million would be put in reserve so that in terms of backup, it would be available should in any year down the road revenues not meet their expectations or projections. So that's one backup. Also, if you take a look at the end, one of the last articles of the bill, there's a section dealing with what we call blink on and blink off. If that reserve fund isn't adequate, if there aren't funds on hand and the Commissioner of Management and Budget feels that backup revenue sources are needed in order for us to meet our obligations, in this order, these blink on provisions would be put into place by the Commissioner of Management Budget. The first is a 10% tax on luxury boxes and suites. That's a tax on the users. We have said all the way along in this effort to try and get a stadium facility here that we wanted to emphasize users helping to pay for this new facility. And so that's what that provision would do. We've also indicated from the very first bill, the bill that I introduced last year, which called for the sports-themed lottery. That's a lottery provision that's been there before, and that would be a second backup funding stream. Third, the Hennepin County taxes that go towards paying for the Twin Stadium Target Field, there are anticipated excess revenues that could then be captured as the third item on a list of potential blink on. And finally, an admission tax of 10% on all of the people attending a game so that, again, all the fans, the people benefiting from this facility would help to pay for it. Just for your information, the Vikings have been paying a 10% tax for a long time. The Twins paid it in the Metrodome. And so what currently, with just the Vikings, that has been gathering or collecting just under $5 million from that admissions tax. All told, we're estimating that these blink on and blink off could provide at least $7 to $10 million of annual additional revenue that could be there to back up the coverage for our debt service. And so we think that is significant. Just as the Commissioner of Management and Budget would be able to blink on one of those provisions in that order, the Commissioner would also be able to blink off. And so if it wasn't needed in a subsequent year, it would go away, and we would rely primarily on, exclusively on the revenue from the gaming operation. Let me just quickly mention some other miscellaneous things that I think are worthy of note with regard to the bill, and then we'll start taking other testimony. You'll find a provision in there that calls for commemorative bricks. This idea is there are people out there that would be willing to contribute to have their name on a brick or some kind of physical presence at the stadium, and so the stadium authority under this bill would be able to set up a system where people would be able to donate to help pay or defray the costs of this. Secondly, amateur sports are guaranteed at least 10 days in the stadium once the stadium is built. The high school league, 7 days. And of course, you know, the one thing I couldn't emphasize enough, everybody talks about this as the Viking Stadium. Please remember all the other things that take place in the Metrodome over the course of a year. There are hundreds of other events that take place there that if it were not for having a dome stadium, lots of high school athletic events, college athletic events, entertainment events, a whole host of community and activities that the people of Minnesota would enjoy. Without a facility, they would have no home, no venue to provide. Well, members, I have some more things I'd like to say along the way, but I think at this point I'll turn it over to some of the testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Lanny. Members, any questions? Mr. Mondale, do you want to come down and speak? We have you on the list, and you certainly don't need to, or Mr. Skime. And members, I should tell you that Representative Lanning's original comments were going to be about twice as long. He was nice enough to narrow those down, and I would hope that all the other proponents of the bill would follow the generosity of the lead author. I thought that'd be funnier. Is there anyone else that would like to come down? Representative Loon.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question for Representative Lanning, if I could. Representative Lanning, on the four blink-on, blink-off provisions, how did you determine the order of those provisions? I guess I'm just wondering why the 10% tax on admissions was kind of far down the list, since those, I would assume, would be the people most enthusiastic about this proposal.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Loon, I know you'll hear from the Vikings later. They don't particularly like the admissions tax idea, and I think that's a reason for moving it down on the list. I think you can make a case for it being in different order, but I guess would be my answer to that question.
You good, Representative Luke? Mr. Bagley and Mr. Poppin, if you guys want to come forward. Gentlemen, go ahead. Whenever you're ready, identify yourselves for the tape and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Lester Bagley, Vice President of Public Affairs and Stadium Development for the Minnesota Vikings. I'm joined by Steve Poppin, Vice President of Finance and our Chief Financial Officer of the Vikings. We appreciate your time tonight. We'll try to keep our comments brief and certainly be available for questions for the members. Now, just one point to Representative Lanning's comments about this facility. Tonight at 8:23 p.m. at the Superdome in New Orleans, Kentucky plays Kansas in the NCAA championship.
Well, wait, that's tonight?
That's tonight.
Oh,
so, yeah. Mr. Chair, I move for an immediate reset.
And this game, the semifinal games and tonight's game are being played to a sold-out crowd. 74,000 people are at that event tonight. The New Orleans Convention and Visitors Bureau estimates that the economic impact of hosting a Final Four is $135 million to that community. The last time that Minnesota held a Final Four was in 2001 at the Metrodome. There's no doubt that the NCAA loves coming to this market. We have a great hospitality market and great hospitality community, but we will not have and never have another NCAA tournament in this community unless and until we resolve this stadium issue. So I just want to point that out. It's going on tonight. But, you know, regarding the stadium legislation, we have a couple of brief comments here. We've, as Representative Lanning said, we've worked through nearly every single issue. We've worked through the site, and this site is the most cost-efficient site. We've worked through finance plan that's been agreed to by state leaders, city leaders, and the team. We've worked through the local support, as Representative Lanning said, and now the charitable gaming proposal with the backup revenues in this bill. We have a proposal that meets the objectives that has been laid out and given to us over the years. And that this proposal uses no new taxes. It uses no general fund revenues. It has the Vikings, as noted, covering over half of the costs when you account for the operating costs as well as the upfront capital. As noted, most cost-efficient site, this opportunity to create thousands of construction jobs and ongoing jobs, and the ability to secure the team for the next generation of Viking fans. We're grateful to the committee for your time tonight, to Representative Lanning for his leadership, the bipartisan group of legislators that have worked on this legislation, continue to work on it, many of the members on this committee, the Governor Dayton, the business community, organized labor for standing with us as we work to resolve this issue. We do believe, and a couple of questions were raised and wanted to make a couple comments, that there are some further refinements that we would like to see to the bill as this process moves forward. We hope that some of these issues can be addressed specifically. We have concerns with asking the team or requiring the team to be the backstop for the state's contribution. The Vikings negotiated over several months an agreement with state and city leaders, a term sheet that requires the team to contribute $427 million up front, which is the third largest private contribution in the history of the NFL. It requires the team to pay $13 million annually in operating costs, and of that $13 million, $8.5 million is operating costs. That rent, that operating cost, will be the highest rent payment by a team in the NFL for a team that is a tenant in a building. And so these things were carefully negotiated. Included in the term sheet that we negotiated is a provision that requires this significant level of private contribution be contingent upon no other taxes being levied on stadium generated revenues. It also was contingent upon this agreement that we struck was contingent upon the team receiving from the facility all the Vikings and NFL revenues to ensure the team is competitive. Again, the $427 million up front and the $13 million per year were negotiated contingent upon no increase in a ticket tax, as well as the team receiving the revenues from the facility. As Representative Lanning noted, one other major difference in the this proposal versus the original bill versus the delete all amendment is that the team would be required to pay the city's operating costs for 5 years. This would be structured as a loan, we would have to, we need to understand these details a little bit better, and we'd have to take this forward to the NFL and to ownership to have this discussion, but wanted to point that provision out as well. With that, just a couple comments. We'll not go much deeper into this, but they're in your packet. We provided a packet of background information and a presentation, a couple of key points that we think it's important that committee members understand that Metrodome, 90 million people have been through the Metrodome in the 30 seasons that it's been in existence. It was built at the end of a construction cycle. It's the smallest stadium in the NFL in terms of square feet. And it's a facility that no longer works for Minnesota. The Vikings are at the bottom of the NFL in stadium revenues, as our fans are at last in the league in fan experience. The lease has expired after the 2011 season. And
Mr. Bagley,
yes.
Can we drag you back just to this bill? I appreciate your point. Members have it in their packets. But if we could focus on the Representative Lanning's bill, the delete all to that, and some of the technical questions or answers that you have or Mr. Poppin might have, we would appreciate it.
With that, Mr. Chair, I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bagley. Mr. Poppin, did you want to speak, or are you there for questions?
I'm here. I'm available for questions, Mr. Chair.
Okay. And for the record, you want to identify yourself?
Steve Poppin, Vice President of Finance and Chief Financial Officer for the Vikings.
Members, any questions for either Mr. Bagley or Mr. Poppin? Representative Johnson.
Question for Mr. Bagley on the contribution the Vikings are putting forward, $427 million, is that what you said?
Yes.
Are you including naming rights in that amount?
Mr. Poppin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes. In order for us to get to the $427 million, dollar contributions, naming rights, is a part of the revenue stream that we are controlling.
Representative Johnson.
Well, I'm just thinking, if this is the People's Stadium and we're putting in the majority of money, why wouldn't we take credit for the naming rights?
Mr. Poppin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as part of the deal that we struck that took quite a while to get to a conclusion, in order to get our contribution to the level that it is, which is, as Lester mentioned, the third highest private contribution in the country as far as NFL teams, that was part of the requirement.
Representative Hoppe, if I could,
Mr.
Representative
Bagley.
Members, in terms of the naming rights issue, you know, Mr. Poppin identified the revenue streams negotiated all team and NFL related revenue streams would go to the team, and national sponsors buy naming rights and build relationships with teams because of their exposure to the NFL and to the TV audience. So in virtually every case in the NFL, the naming rights goes 100% to the team. There may be one minor exception in the NFL.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how about personal seat licenses? Is that part of the contribution?
Mr. Poppin.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, as part of the $427 million, any stadium seat licenses that would be sold are a part of that contribution.
Representative Johnson, is that cover you?
Yeah, that'll cover me for now. Yes, thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could just, on the seat license issue again, the team has not determined whether or not we would use personal seat licenses or be part of the stadium finance package, but I would make the point that all $427 million upfront and $13 million annually will be guaranteed by the Vikings.
Thank you, Mr. Bagley. Members, any other questions? Is there anyone else who would like to come down and speak in favor of this bill? I have several people on the list. I don't know if they want to come down or not. So if you want to come down and speak in favor of it, you're welcome to do so. Seeing no one, with that, we will thank you, gentlemen. I know there are some people that want to come down and speak against it. Mr. Sweet, do you want to come down and speak against this bill as well?
Yes.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Mr. Sweet. If you could identify yourself for the record again, and please proceed.
I'm David Sweet, and I'm the inventor of the iDome. I'm an Emmy Award-winning comedy ghostwriter. I wrote a script for Santa Claus for Comedy Central, The Colbert Report.
Well,
First off, I wanted to just address the 12 questions I had, and I want everyone to remember that this is a billion-dollar transaction. So even though we're a little running late on time, we should really direct our attention to the amount of money we're talking about here, $1 billion. I'm very concerned about some of the comments that were made about how it's being used today, because I personally know that they're paying about $500 an hour for the Metrodome. And I sent this questionnaire off to a number of members, you know, asking how of those existing clients that are renting the Metrodome, how many could afford the $3,000 or $4,000 per hour rate with the user fees? Because if out of all their customers, you know, none of them can afford the new rates, hourly rates, the high schools, that would be something we should probably know today. I certainly want to know. Second, you know, with number two, with other stadiums being funded privately, you know, why did they reject our offer to privately fund the new stadium through corporate sponsors? You know, clearly, you know, gambling is your last choice. You know, if there's no other options on the table, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, the land of 3M and innovation. You know, why are we not innovating here? Why am I sitting down with, you know, Senator Chamberlain, and he's going, yeah, Dave, this is a great way to do this. Let's get these 26 companies to put $50 million on the table. And we're going to have daily and weekly events. Okay? We don't want a big empty stadium sitting there with only 10 days of the year it's going to be used. So, you know, I want to point out how important it is that we have events that are going to be daily and weekly to attract thousands of visitors to the Twin Cities here. And I also wanted to ask for the independent analysis for the cost per job. You know, I read in the city pages it was $475,000 per job. That doesn't sound like any job program to me. I mean, at the end of the day, I would like to see an independent figure, you know, brought to us from an independent company of what it actually the cost is. How many jobs are there? If there's just 10 events a year, how many people are getting employed up for those 10 days? And then, number five, how many other businesses do you know that would turn down an offer to fund a $1 billion business expansion project with free private money? You know, I sat down with Senator Rosen some time ago, and she just recently signed this new proposal we had put together with Senator Chamberlain and his new bill. And at the end of the day, you know, the reason is, I guess it's a good question. I mean, how many companies would turn down $1 billion of private money for an expansion? I don't think any of them. So I guess that's a question I have for the executive team, management team with the Vikings. And I look forward to an answer to that. And then number six, how many AFL-CIO union unemployed members would want to know that they could be working today if they simply did not have a requirement for the Vikings to be the only private entity that controls this project? You know, on the West Coast, they got a loan for $850 million from Bank of America because the underwriters approved it. I worked with some of the top underwriters in California, in Irvine. I know what they do. They want to stay, have a piece of real estate. They want to see who's paying money, and then they approve it. And so I think that the fact that California could do this is a statement to the need for that type of approach. Certainly to sit and blame the legislature for keeping people out of work isn't fair if we have a requirement that just one company controls the whole project. I mean, they're talking about having multiple teams use the stadium on the West Coast, all the things that underwriters are looking for. Number seven, since our plan has daily and weekly events, you know, how will your voters feel if our events are rolled out in a different state? You know, we have other states right now that we work with that we could roll our project out to. As these events will draw thousands of new state visitors to the state and boost the economy and create hundreds of permanent jobs, you know, I sat down and went through the plan in detail with Senator Chamberlain, and at the end of the day.
Mr. Sweet, first of all, in this committee, we have a limit on the number of times you can mention senators.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm getting better. And then second of all, seriously, if you could tailor your comments again towards the gaming or gambling or this particular bill, there will be, I believe, there will be another opportunity for more stadium comments where, as Representative Lanning, assuming the bill moves out of here tonight, moves the bill along on its way.
I'm almost done. Okay. So.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet.
But this is why I'm opposed to the gambling. Okay. And since Bloomingdale's closed the Mall of America, would it now make sense to support this critical state tourist attraction as this loss could be the beginning to more mall closures like Sears as they are experiencing serious financial troubles? So, again, the idea of having gambling finance this, I think we should look at other stores that are gambling right now with staying alive, like Sears at the Mall of America. Number 10, if the U of M loses this opportunity to have an integrated free training $50 million boost that we talked about doing today, actually, the U of M, you know, U of M had a big rally on Friday because they can get $50 million, but you know, we're talking about giving $500 million for the Vikings. So we had a meeting today, and Senator Chamberlain talked to them about getting $50 million for them through a barter system to support some of their needs. So at the end of the day, you know, we had talked about some new technology and training. We're going to do a weekly at this new with our proposal, which would allow the U of M to compete more. Right now, IBM will not even, with the current status of the education program over at Carlson School of Management, IBM will not even interview the grads because they cannot articulate why IBM should hire them. So there's some issues with the curriculum right now, and we need to look at the big picture of what we want to do with our state. And 11, you know, Target Corp's own employee, you know, states gambling will destroy all small businesses. I was at the Target downtown Minneapolis talking to a guy in the electronics department, and he was working in Bettendorf. And at the end of the day, for a TV network there, and he saw all the businesses close in Quad Cities because once they went on that riverboat and got their $5 prime rib, guess what? They lost their paycheck, and that was it. All the other businesses closed. So that's Target's own employee, and I'd be happy to bring him out here to testify about what his experience was with gambling in Quad Cities. So again, I ask, why would we want to destroy all small businesses with the gambling funding option? And that's all the points I had, sir. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sweet. We appreciate you coming back again. Mr. Pritchard, we missed you earlier. If you want to come down, please identify yourself for the record and start when you're ready.
Yes. Sorry, I wasn't here before. I was looking at this bill. Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and we speak in opposition. We're not taking a position on the stadium per se, but we strongly oppose the use of expanding gambling through the electronic pull tabs and bingo. I think if you look at this issue, sometimes it seems like an innocuous proposal. Well, let's just put electronic pull tabs. But I think you have to step back and realize that video gambling or electronic gambling is the most addictive form of gambling. It's comparable to the high that one gets from crack cocaine. That's why it's called the crack cocaine of gambling. And our concern is that this is a major expansion of gambling. That they're proposing putting these machines in 2,500 sites across the state. Basically, you're going to be blanketing the state with a very addictive form of gambling. And we think that there's a cost there that really hasn't been talked about or considered, and that's the addiction and the problems which affect not just a handful of people, but thousands of Minnesotans. And we feel that this bill, in terms of expanding the gambling, is bad for a couple reasons. One is it's going to lock this in for maybe 30 years, the length of these bonds. Secondly, you have the state, in a sense, preying on the people it should be protecting and supporting, the people of Minnesota, by, in a sense, encouraging them to gamble to pay for the stadium. And finally, I think to realize that gambling, the electronic gambling in casinos, they estimate between 30 to 50% of the gambling in casinos from the electronic component comes from 1% of the gamblers. So you're really targeting the people with gambling problems because those are the people you want to keep coming back, or the people want to keep coming back to gamble. And so we feel that this proposal is going to really create more problems than it's going to solve, and we shouldn't be encouraging addiction and indebtedness, which is what gambling does, especially the electronics. So for those reasons, strongly oppose the use of electronic pull tabs as a revenue source, but we don't take a position on the stadium per se. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Pritchard. Is there a Dan Dobson? Please come down. And Mr. Dobson is the last one I have on the list to testify against this. If there's anybody else that wants to, please, you're welcome to after Mr. Dobson is done. Mr. Dobson, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record and start when you're ready.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Dan Dobson. I'm a member of the No Stadium Tax Coalition. This is a bad proposal at a bad time. We have vast unmet needs in the state. We watched the video here a few minutes ago talking about defibrillators for fire departments. How many defibrillators, how many fire trucks, how many fire stations could we build with $1 billion to build a stadium to benefit one billionaire from New Jersey is an obscene waste of money. But I think Representative Johnson has hit upon several key points, and I commend him for that. Not enough senators or representatives have asked these questions. This is supposedly a people's stadium, yet all the revenues from the people who will benefit from the stadium are going to the team and not the state. What about the naming rights? What about the personal seat licenses? It's not even mentioned. No one has mentioned the G4 loans that Vikings will get, $200 million loan-free or interest-free. There was an article by Minnesota Public Radio saying that the Vikings' contribution may be as low as $30 million. I suggest that this bill be rejected and that the state legislature say, look at Vancouver. Vancouver, British Columbia has a dome that is identical to our own dome. It hosted the 2010 Winter Olympics. That dome was renovated after the Winter Olympics for approximately half the cost of what the Vikings want for the dome, or $563 million. And this dome even has a retractable roof. Other teams in the NFL have largely funded their own stadiums. The Carolina Patriots did it essentially with personal seat licenses, charging an average of $6,000 for a personal seat license for each person who sits in that. Same as the Carolina Panthers, New York Jets, and the New York Giants. This is a bad bill, should be rejected. Oh, one last point. The Vikings have threatened that if they do not get a new stadium, they will move to Los Angeles. Well, we've seen the lease has run out, Los Angeles is not knocking, and Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL, has said that rather than take a team and move it to Los Angeles, the NFL will probably expand for a team in Los Angeles. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dobson. Members, any questions? Thank you, Mr. Dobson. We have one more name on the list, Mr. Tom Goldstein. Mr. Goldstein, welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please start when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Tom Goldstein. I live in St. Paul. So I want to try to address some of the comments that have been made here by other testifiers. And I want to talk about priorities. I'm surprised that I appreciate Representative Johnson's questions. I think he's revealed that this oft-told comment about $427 million as the Vikings' contribution is far from accurate. You know, I don't know how other people think of a contribution, but I think the public generally assumes this is money that the Vikings are putting in. This is money that, if not for the construction of the stadium, would not be available to the Vikings. And yet they're using that as their contribution. And as a result, the actual amount of money that the Vikings have to put in is not being questioned. And I believe that what the Vikings want in terms of a stadium could not be built without other assistance. But the question is, what kind of stadium do the Vikings need? You know, I know this committee is primarily to deal with the gambling aspects of the bill, but you have a bill before you. You have the ability to amend this bill, to ask questions about this bill, rather than send it on to someone else. And I think you should ask those questions. Representative Lanning noted that the Vikings came to him originally in around 2005. He said new management, that's about the time Mr. Wolf acquired the team. Somehow the Vikings say that they've been waiting, and that therefore, because they've been waiting and they've been asking nicely, that it should be a priority for this committee and for this legislature. Governor Pawlenty introduced, before Mr. Wolf took over, a bill to end long-term homelessness in 2012. Long-term homelessness is far from over. All those folks have been waiting to have their concerns addressed as well. We often talk about how there's sort of an unquantifiable thing about what it means to have a professional football team. You know, you can't really put a price tag on it. Well, actually, you can. It's the cost of tickets. It's the cost of advertising. It's the cost of naming rights. All those things are very quantifiable. But how do we quantify having a home over your head? I'm sorry that there aren't homeless and affordable advocacy folks before you. I think many of them have been cowed because they feel if they come here and speak against the stadium that something might happen to their revenue or the programs they try to support, so they don't come before you. And they're probably better at articulating, but I don't think you can quantify what it's like to have a roof over your head. And I think when we talk about jobs, and I only mention that because Mr. Bagley mentioned it, the jobs amount to the equivalent of 680 full-time jobs over 3 years. And you can do the math. We don't need to have an independent. It's provided by Mortenson. There's 7,500 jobs. But the number of hours means the average job will be 567 hours. That should concern you because I think having a job is very important to people. You can't really quantify what it means to have a job. But people will not have jobs. They will have short-term positions. Does that matter? Yes, it does. But at a cost of what amounts to about $1 billion, it's not what we should use as a priority to fund this. If you're going to adopt charitable gambling, and that bill has passed, if charitable gambling is going to be expanded, the idea that the Vikings should be a priority for this has not been demonstrated at all. And I think every project that comes before you is vetted, whether it's to build a bridge or to expand roads or affordable housing or take your pick of what the project would be. The organization or the entity that brings forward the project doesn't set the terms, and then you just say, okay, let's see how to fund what you want. They have to demonstrate that they need your support. They have to demonstrate that it can't be done another way that would be equally valuable. And if you don't ask those questions, this bill will just go from committee to committee, and all you'll be talking about is how do we fund what the Vikings want, and yet we're calling it a people's stadium. How do we fund what the people want? The people say they don't want you to fund this. So if you're going to move it forward, at least ask some questions, some tough questions like Representative Johnson did, because there's a lot in this bill that's problematic. There's a lot that has not been challenged. So I have a pretty good idea of where this bill is going. I'm not naive, and I think that that's unfortunate because I don't think just because an entity like them is asking me, and it's your problem to solve it. The business community is not at the table here, and they could be, and they should be. In other communities, the business community has been the difference in getting a stadium done, and they're not here because the Vikings want their money to go into the Vikings' pockets in terms of advertising and all sorts of other things, rather than having the business community here to make the difference so that the stadium can be built. And the last point I will make is, as Mr. Bagley repeats every time he gets before a committee, it's about the team being competitive. The NFL is a salary cap league. They share broadcast revenues. They share numerous revenues. This year that amount is about $4 billion. In 2014 it grows to $7 billion. Their salaries that they pay to their players are almost covered by the broadcast rights they have. The problem is they don't generate enough local revenue, and so the other teams are not happy with them because the Vikings are a net taker from the other teams. That is not your problem. That is the NFL's problem. And we have a stadium with a 30-year lease. There's talk about securing the team for the next generation. Generation isn't just 30 years. If you move forward a bill that has a 30-year lease, that guarantees that year 20, the Vikings will be then talking about the next generation of stadiums that they need. So start with a 50-year lease, and then you'll be securing this for the next generation. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to stand for questions if there are any.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. Representative Nelson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Goldstein, I guess I took a little bit of umbrage at the statement you said about short-term jobs of the construction workers that are going to be building this. I'm a carpenter by trade, and there is no such thing as a long-term job in a construction field. Every job you work as long as that job or that project you're working on is done, then you move to the next one. And you do that enough times, you can have a week here, 2 weeks there, 3 weeks at another job. Maybe if you're lucky, you'll get a year-long project or a two-year-long project, and you don't have to move around. But it's those 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 months jobs that create a 30-year career that gets you to a pension, that gets you to be able to retire. And I've been hearing this in the legislature. I've heard this from other people in the past talk about, well, these are only short-term jobs that we're creating. Right now we have 30% unemployment in the construction trades. We're in depression-level era of employment, and we have people that are losing their homes. I had a conversation this afternoon with a longtime friend hasn't worked in the last 30 months. He's looking to get 11 months worth of work, and he can get his pension. And so he's looking for a job like this, a short-term job, so he can get to his pension. And when we denigrate these jobs of the construction trades and call them short-term jobs or temporary jobs, it insults me, because those are the type of jobs that got me to be able to get to my pension. And so, I mean, it makes me mad when people call these short-term jobs. Especially right now, this legislative session, we were supposed to be about building jobs. We haven't done a lot of things to create jobs. But this is the type of project that the state of Minnesota can do, as a project like this or a bonding bill that fixes up our infrastructure, that creates jobs that we can do. Everything else we do is nibbles around the edges. But this is the type of project that we can do to put these people to work so they can pay their mortgages, feed their families.
If I may,
Mr. Goldstein. Yes, you may.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, first of all, I apologize if there's any offense taken. In a situation like this, where a proposal is brought forward as a jobs proposal, and that's been talked about many times, I think we have a responsibility to set aside a motion and look at the numbers. If every construction job that you've had cost the equivalent of $1.2 million to create, there wouldn't be any jobs created for in the future. I understand very well the situation in the construction industry, but the construction industry is not alone in people who are suffering. I would much rather see us bonding many other projects, you know, an $800 million or $1 billion bonding project that would create longer term jobs within the construction industry and other. I was simply taking the amount of hours, which is 4.2 million, which is Mortenson's number, and dividing it by 7,500 jobs, which is the number of jobs would be created, which is 567 hours. That's a 14-week position. Now, I apologize if my nomenclature was offensive, but I'm simply saying, to me, 14 weeks, is that a job? Is that working? Absolutely. Is it important to people who are employed? Absolutely. But there has to be a cost-benefit analysis. We do it all the time. I'm in favor of spending, you know, this state spending $1 billion to create jobs. This way, however, is very short term, and it won't solve people that are near foreclosure. It won't get people out of debt. The friend you have that's been out of work for 30 months, I don't know if there's another job after him. I hope there is, and that's what I'm asking. Let's have projects that ensure there's more jobs down the line. And I don't think this does it, because when it's over, and it's much more expensive than construction jobs. If you look at jobs, and you can look at, and I can provide you with the government studies, $2,000 to $4,500 for infrastructure jobs, what the U.S. Department of Commerce said is what it typically costs for bridge and road building. Now, I don't know why it's so different, but that's the number they quote. And even President Obama, when he introduced his plan, $93,000 was a very rough estimate for what the job creation was on the ARRA legislation. And this is 10 to 12 times that amount, because it's only the equivalent of 800 or 680 full-time jobs over a three-year period. That's how you get to 7,500 with their numbers.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Goldstein, you don't understand. I don't believe you understand the way construction works. You don't want a carpenter on the job for 14 years on the same job. We go to a project, we do that job, and our part's done, we move to the next job. And that's the way the construction industry works. There is no such thing as a long-term job in the construction industry. So, I mean, that, like I said, that's why I take offense when people call these temporary short-term jobs that aren't worth anything. It's these short-term jobs, multiples of these jobs, through the years that get you to a 30-year pension. And that's what's wrong with that's why I take offense when people say that.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Members, any other questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I promised myself I wouldn't say anything tonight, but I want to support what Representative Nelson's saying. He's spot on. 2020 talks about the infrastructure and the things that we're looking at doing. If we were to do $1 billion worth of road projects, the same kinds of things that would help the infrastructure in the state of Minnesota, we would be in the same position. A lot of the dollars that are being attached to this are the supplies, the construction materials that are going into these types of projects. And I think that anybody who's been around construction knows that, even what you were advocating this evening, sir, some different kinds of projects would not have in the construction area long-term jobs. And I would tend to agree that Representative Nelson is spot on with that.
Mr. Chair, if I just
Mr.
might...
Mr. Goldstein, quickly.
The difference is that those jobs inure to the public. Those benefit the public. And I'm all in favor of construction jobs that benefit the public. These jobs are benefiting Mr. Wilf and his bottom line. The franchise was worth $600 million when he bought it. It's $800 million now. And if a new stadium, it will probably be worth $1 billion. So I think if you have public works projects, there's a great deal of public that benefits, unless we're going to use, again, the unquantifiable thing of what having a Vikings team. And I think we've quantified that. So I'm sorry that I've caused any offense. I'm just doing the numbers. And I do understand how the construction world works, but almost every construction project is either a public works building for the public, or it is a privately financed for the private sector. And this is not that.
Thank you, Mr. Goldstein. You. Is there anyone else that would like to come down and speak for or against the bill? Come on down, identify yourself for the record, and please proceed when you're ready. And by the way, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Ed Kohler. I'm from Minneapolis. So
could you spell your last name?
K-O-H-L-E-R.
Thank you.
This is my first time testifying to something like this, but I guess this topic motivated me. Being a Minneapolis resident, I might have the opportunity of paying for the stadium three times between the state portion, Minneapolis portion, and the Hennepin County portion if there's a fallback on that. So looking at that, one thing I thought about was, is the gambling revenue viable? And one way that I looked at this was, I read the House report, your report, on called Industry Under Stress from 2010 that looked at the amount of revenue that's coming in through pull tabs. And when I read this, it said that between 2004 and 2010, there's been a 20% drop in the revenue generated from pull tabs. So why is that? So I try to put some thought into that. I understand that King Wilson wants to have electronic pull tabs, the idea that it's going to bring in more revenue, it may. But looking at it, what I looked at was there are a couple things that have happened since 2004. A big one to me, a milestone that may affect the revenue from gambling, is June 29, 2007 was the launch of the iPhone. I think that's kind of an important milestone here because I'm sure many of you have kids, and if you have a kid with an iPhone in their hand, getting that phone out of their hand so they can play pull tabs, good luck with that. So I think that's a potential for issues there. In 2008, there was a 12.8% drop in revenue from pull tabs. What happened in 2008? That was the year that the App Store launched. So before that, there was an iPhone, but it didn't have all the games that it has today and all the other stuff you could do with it, where the distractions went up and up and up. So now, that's when you started to have the Facebook app on there, where if someone's sitting in a bar and people are tagging pictures of them, they're going to look at that. That's a much higher priority to them than anything that could happen with gambling, in my opinion. So between 2006 and 2009, smartphone penetration in the U.S., according to the FCC, has gone up from 15% to 42%. So I think we see phones going up as interest in full-tab revenue is going down. That's a trend I see, at least. 50% of Americans in 2012, according to Nielsen, now own smartphones. And of that, between people who are between 24 and 35 years of age, it's up to 66%. And I think it's pretty clear that that trend is only going to continue. The phones will become cheaper. The data plans will become cheaper. There's going to be more phones in more people's hands. And if that's the case, do we have a viable revenue stream? Because when I go to a bar and I see people who have smartphones, they're not playing pull tabs. And if I went into a bar where there's a pitcher of beer sitting in the middle of a table and there's pull tabs all around, and I gave everyone at that table an iPhone, would they continue to play pull tabs, or would they play with the iPhones? I mean, I think it's as easy as that in terms of the distraction of this stuff. So that's a theory that I have that I think really makes me think that there's a good chance that I could end up paying for the stadium three times, both at the city, the state, and at the county level to make up for as the backup funding source. So that's important to me. And the one other thing I really would like you to consider is, are you honestly willing to believe that the Vikings would never come back to renegotiate the terms of their rent? They don't pay rent at the Metrodome. They're professional real estate people. I have a very good hunch that they would be willing to negotiate that down over time. So can you rely upon rent from the Vikings as a reliable revenue source? So that's all I have. Thank you.
Mr. Kohler, you did a nice job. I mean, we couldn't tell it was your first time. You did well. You. Representative Anzels, did you have a question?
Yes.
Members, any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Kohler. Come on up, sir. If you could identify yourself for the record, please start whenever you're ready.
My name is Peter Hansen Reyes. I am president of the Glass Bowl of Minnesota Incorporated in the state of Minnesota. I pay my taxes here in the state of Minnesota. I am a local corporation. I write the infrastructure for that glass bowl in a hard copy. I have 900 pages of it and 7 corporations. It does not involve poll tabs or gambling or county taxes or state taxes for Ramsey County. It involves common bond housing on the north 50 acres, 430 acres for the Glass Bowl of Minnesota, and also it involves the Burlington Northern and Southern Railway for the transportation rights to Minneapolis and to St. Paul and to the Blaine County Airport, as they now have in existence for the North Star line. The Burlington Northern owns that line. My position is to obtain jobs for Minnesota. I have sent an email to the governor for a meeting in his office to be there with the Vikings, Mark Wolf, Lester Bagley, Ziggy Wolf, and also Mr. Warren. I know nothing of their financial affairs. I know that I incorporate for infrastructure. The stadium in Minneapolis will fail because it does not consider the carbon footprint, which is of prime importance to the University of Minnesota and to Purdue University. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to come down and speak for or against this? Seeing nobody coming down, Representative Lanning, do you want to come back up?
Mr. Chairman and members, this bill comes before you today as a result of a bipartisan effort. There have been a number of members from both sides of the aisle in both the House and the Senate.
Representative Lanning, hang on one second. I think what we should do at this point is I will renew my motion that the DE7 amendment be adopted.
Did we amend that at all?
No, we didn't.
We didn't. We incorporated. Okay. The DE7 amendment be adopted, seeing that there are no more testifiers, and then we can get on. We've got a couple of more amendments to the bill if this goes on. All those in favor of the DE7 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The DE7 amendment is adopted. It's now in the shape that the author would like it. Which amendment are we doing first? Representative Atkins, do you have the A12 amendment that you're offering?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, maybe we could take them in order. I've got the A7 as well.
Okay. A7 amendment. Members, everyone should have that.
And, with respect to the A7, Mr. Chair, we heard talk about naming rights, and we've heard talk about various other things. What the amendment would do for anybody that doesn't have it in hand would simply require that the stadium authority or whatever entity is operating the stadium, if it moves forward, would seek out requests for proposals for goods and services and sponsorships and the like. And that way we have an open discussion, open solicitation for the various things that would be put into use at a so-called people's stadium. It seems like, in view of the discussion that we've had, a wise thing to do and something that would be of benefit to the stadium and to the taxpayers. And it also falls within the jurisdiction of this. I've tried to limit my amendments, Mr. Chairman, to items like gaming is the other one, and then this one is solicitation of bids and RFPs.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Representative Lanning, would you like to speak to this?
But Mr. Chair and members, I do not object to that amendment.
Okay.
And if it, the will of the committee, I accept it.
Is there anyone in the crowd that would like to speak for or against this A7 amendment? Seeing no one rushing down, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, Representative Atkins, how does this play with Section 14 of the bill on page 15, Article 1, Section 15, looking at Subdivision 2?
Representative Anderson, could you repeat that page and line?
Sure. It's page 15.
Please. Okay.
It's Section 14, Subdivision 2. And it talks about
other required agreements.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Representative Adams.
I'm just reading that provision. I memorized most of the bill, Mr. Chairman, but there were a couple items that I had not committed to memory.
This audience is tired.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I believe that I think the two can be coupled together, and I would trust that. Moving forward, what that's a reference to anybody that doesn't have the bill. It says the NFL talks about other required agreements, and the NFL team or the authority shall give food, beverage, retail, and concession workers presently employed by the NFL team or the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission or its vendors at the existing football stadium the opportunity to continue their employment in comparable positions. And I don't necessarily expect Representative Anderson that this would interfere with that at all, but it would simply open up the process and seek out proposals for that work.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Folks, is there anyone in the crowd that wants to come down and speak for or against this amendment? Members, any questions? Seeing none, we will vote on the A7 amendment. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Atkins. We are now on, what was the next number, the A12 amendment. Representative Atkins, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll offer the A12. And actually, I could use a little help perhaps from Representative Lanning, who's walking away. He must have really not liked my amendment. This deals with what Representative Kreisel proposed earlier relative to the tip boards. And my question, Representative Lanning, under the current bill, the current language in your bill, if e-pull tabs come in at, I believe it's $72 million is the projected annual revenue, if in fact it comes in at, say, half that, there's a lot of folks that are quite skeptical about how much revenue is going to come in from e-pull tabs and from e-bingo. If it comes in at $36 million, which is half the 72, how would that be allocated under the current language of the bill?
Representative Lanning.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Atkins, I think I'd like Mr. McCormick to respond to that question, if he would.
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members, the question I think is, what would happen if they projected $72 million came in as half of that amount, $36 million? Under the bill, the first $36 million is allocated to tax relief.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Lanning. That's what makes me a little skittish about the approach that we have in the bill. If in fact e-pull tabs and e-bingo doesn't deliver and comes in, I just arbitrarily, and Mr. McCormick, Representative Lanning, I just arbitrarily pulled out the half number. But it's my understanding under the current language, all of that would go towards tax relief for the charities. And I'm all in favor of that. I carried Representative Kreisel's bill when we were in the majority. So I believe that that's an appropriate thing to provide tax relief. But if that's in fact the case, that leaves the big zero for any sort of stadium construction. The point of the amendment, which simply provides, as Representative Kreisel's bill did, for sports tip boards, it's yet again, Mr. Chair, one additional backup revenue. I believe it's $19 million annually or something like that. And whether we like it or not, folks, sports tip boards are already occurring. Just about every bar, not every bar that I go to, but some bars I go to, some construction sites, I'd sure like to go to more bars and find out where it's all occurring. Maybe I'll do a survey during the off season and find out where sports stiff boards are occurring. The fact is it's occurring. The fact is we currently don't get any revenue from it. And if we simply recognize that it's occurring and collect the revenues from it, it is anticipated to be, and I think the charities have spoken, they believe that these revenues really are very viable. Some of them are a little bit more skeptical about e-pull tabs and about electronic bingo, but you don't hear as much skepticism about the sports tip boards, and I think that's because they are, in fact, already going on. So, Representative Lanning, I think you anticipated this amendment as well, and I'm hopeful that you can incorporate or would be willing to accept this amendment as well as the bill travels forward, and we'll kind of see where it goes. Mr. Chair, that concludes my comments with respect to the amendment.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Atkins. I would accept this amendment.
Members, any questions to the amendment? Is there anyone in the crowd that would like to speak for or against this amendment? Seeing no one coming down, we will vote on the A12 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. The A12 amendment is adopted. I am not aware of any other amendments that we have before us this evening. Members, any final questions for the author? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure if this is a question for Representative Lanning. I was hoping that Mr. McCormick could help us out. On the Hennepin County tax, the fallback plan, if they have to go to that route, does that mean that it will delay the payment of the debt on the Twins Stadium? And does that just make the Hennepin County tax continue for a longer period of time, or how does that work?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, currently the Hennepin County sales tax, 0.015%, is allocated first and primarily to the payment of the Twin Stadium, second to payment for libraries and for amateur sports. And then finally there's an increment, and that increment is currently, as I understand it, being used by Hennepin County to pay down those bonds earlier than otherwise anticipated. Under this bill, if the blink-on article is blinked on in sequence, the Hennepin County incremental excess, not the libraries, not the amateur sports, but just the increment above that, would go toward this stadium, which would slow down early payment of the Twins bonds.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. McCormick, so then, in essence, because they wouldn't be able to pay down the debt as fast as they would if this money wasn't taken, it would result in a delay of the sales tax coming off. Is that correct?
Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Thank you.
Members, any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lanning, does this, in this bill somewhere, is there language that specifically ignores or supersedes the Minneapolis's 1997 charter amendment that prohibits more than $10 million to be spent on sports stadiums?
Representative Lanning.
How is that addressed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I would prefer if somebody from the city of Minneapolis would answer that question, because they're the ones, and Mr. Mondale would also be able to respond to that. Mayor?
Well, Mr. Mayor, you are most welcome in our committee. We much appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and recognizing the hour, I will make it very quick. I'm joined by Susan Siegel, our city attorney. As this bill is structured, Mr. Chair and Representative.
And Mr. Mayor, we all know who you are, but if you could identify yourself for the tape just to make sure our I's are dotted and T's are crossed.
Thank you.
R.T.
Ryback, Mayor of Minneapolis. Currently, the state imposes hospitality taxes on the city of Minneapolis. This would continue to impose those taxes, and the state would take part of those taxes to pay for the Viking Stadium. After that, some of those dollars would be allocated to us. That arrangement, in our understanding, does not violate the city's charter. I would, Mrs. Chair, if I could turn to our city attorney to elaborate further.
You've noticed through the evening we frequently turn to our attorney, so welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself to the for the record and enlighten us, we'd appreciate it.
I don't know about the enlightening part, but Mr. Chair, Susan Siegel, I'm the Minneapolis city attorney, and the mayor is correct. The way that the bill has been structured, the Commissioner of Revenue would retain the portion of what we call the convention center taxes from that 1986 special law, and would then retain that money, and it would be used for stadium funding. That those funds would not come into the city hands, and it would not trigger our charter voting referendum provision.
Thank you, Ms. Siegel. Representative Johnson, follow up.
Yeah, just briefly. Well, Mr. Mayor, do you think you're kind of doing an end around as far as the spirit and intent of that referendum from 97? It seems pretty clear the Minneapolis voters made their desires known. What's your take?
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Chair and Representative, the spirit and the intent, as I understand it, of the amendment long ago was that if the city used its dollars for past a certain amount, there would be restrictions on those. Let's be clear about these dollars. These are hospitality taxes that have been imposed that are 100% directed by the state of Minnesota. If the city had had any right whatsoever to have used those dollars many years ago, I would have used those to put police on the street and to lower property taxes. And anyone who has followed what we've done in the city of Minneapolis has known that has been where we put our priorities. However, we have no control over those dollars. And therefore, I believe this absolutely fits within both the spirit and the full extent of the law.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Representative Johnson. Members, other questions for the mayor or Ms. Siegel? And folks, I know the hour is getting late, and we apologize for keeping you waiting at the start, but is there anyone else that wants to come down and speak for or against this bill? We normally don't ask this much, but I things were a little helter-skelter tonight. So not seeing anybody coming down. Representative Lanning, we'll give you the final words.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to have this long-awaited bill heard tonight. As I started to say earlier, this bill comes before you tonight as a bipartisan effort. We have had a group of people from the House from both sides of the aisle and the Senate who have been working on this bill for a long time, the last year. And in the spirit of that, I'd like to call Representative Morrow down to be with me. For those of you that may recall the whole Twin Stadium issue, we had Representative Finstead, who was in the House. And
Representative Lanning, you were doing so well. No, Representative Morrow, I'm just kidding.
And Representative Sertich, oftentimes they both appeared before. Representative Morrow is the second author on the bill, and I would like to have him have an opportunity to make a few comments as well. But let me just respond to a couple of things. First of all, remember this facility will be owned by the state of Minnesota. It's not going to be owned by the team. It's not going to be controlled by the team. It's going to be owned by the people of Minnesota, by the state of Minnesota. And it'll be controlled by a citizen-appointed panel at the stadium authority as they move forward. The other thing I want to say is that when people talk about other priorities, yeah, we have other priorities that we need to fund, and that's why we've said from day one we are not going to raise any statewide income or sales taxes to pay for this, because those dollars are needed for education, human services, and the like. But one thing that hasn't been mentioned so far is that if the team were to leave, and that is a very real possibility if Minnesota decides not to do anything, that we're going to lose a lot of revenue that we've been accustomed to for a long time. Just the team itself and the organization, $20 million a year is lost in income tax revenue. That's money that's going to do the kinds of things others have said are priorities. Let me also point out the fact that 40% of the people who come to the games come from outside the state of Minnesota. And I can't tell you how many people I've talked to, especially from North Dakota, since that's next door to me, who have said, look, if the Vikings are not here, I'm not going to come down and spend hundreds of dollars for a weekend to attend a game, obviously. And a lot of times people forget about that potential lost revenue. And obviously the local folks who, you know, could spend money elsewhere, that you can argue that that revenue still would be available to the state, but you've got all the revenue that's generated by the team itself, the revenue that comes into Minnesota from out of the state, 40%, and I've had many of those people say they wouldn't come. That's something that needs to be kept in mind. Let me turn to Representative Morrow, and then I have just one couple last final comments, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Lanning, for the record, I will speak for the committee. We think highly of Representative Morrow. It was entirely inappropriate for me to tease him earlier. Representative Morrow, welcome. We're happy that you're here.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just felt like I was at home. So, you know, I think Representative Lanning wanted me up here in part because I kept pestering him as he was sitting in the back here, and I kept talking about the income taxes. And Mr. Chair and members, over the 30 years, the state of Minnesota will collect over $800 million in income taxes from the Viking players, staff, and visiting players. And for the Vikings, 70% of their revenue comes from out of state. Those are amazing numbers. And when you think about it, that means over $550 million of income tax revenue collected by the state that will be gone if the team leaves. And that's been a motivating factor for me, because I truly do think the team will leave if a new stadium is not built. That we could go into that, but I know, Mr. Chair, now may not be the time, but I do believe the team will leave if something is not done. Mr. Chair, members, the only other thing I would add is, for me, this is a quality of life question. Millions of Minnesotans watch or listen to the Vikings game, and everyone around this table who's tried to door knock on a Sunday afternoon knows that. Mr. Chair and members, for me, it's a quality of life question, much like a park, much like the rest recreational facilities, much like museums are. And at that point, the question becomes, what's a reasonable price for the state of Minnesota to pay for that? And we had great questions, great discussion from Representative Johnson and others. But, Mr. Chair and members, I do hope that we can move this bill forward, because I think it's important for the quality of life of Minnesota. It's important economically to Minnesota. And I look forward to working with Representative Lang as this bill moves through the committee process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morrow. And with that, members, I will renew my motion that House File 2810, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lang and Representative Morrow. Thank you, members. And members, I believe this will be our last committee hearing of the year, so I'd like to say thank you to Mr. Rubis, who apparently has disappeared early, Mr. Sullivan, Tom the Page, and Bethany and Dan. Thank you all very much.